ancient as it is, this story in Genesis is a remarkable one. It begins with a primitive memory of life in a dreamy garden paradise, a place where things were serene, unambiguous, and intelligible. Nourishment was at their fingertips. The companionship of the man and woman was uncomplicated. Best of all, they had a whole world to discover and to enjoy at their leisure. They were at home in their world, comfortable with each other, and at one with God. It didn't last, though. When it ended, it wasn't because of the usual stuff, laziness, for example, or maliciousness or incompetence. No, it ended, it says, because they knew too much to be able to live in their innocent, know-nothing paradise any longer. It says that when these first humans ate from the tree of knowledge, nothing was the same again. Once they were knowledgeable about themselves and about each other, they were self-conscious and felt exposed and insecure. Now knowing, for example, that there were consequences for almost anything they did, good or bad, that their choices had serious implications, they discovered worry. Once the knowledge sunk in that at some point they would die, it put a serious dent in their carefree approach to time. Worse yet, each additional bite from the tree of knowledge further barred them from living in the warm, womb-like innocence of their Garden of Eden. That is what makes it such an amazing story. Primitive as were the people and the culture from which it came, already they are grappling with the question, if the Creator and the creation are good, why this complexity? Why isn't life in the world a sweet, secure paradise? Why, unlike all the other creatures, do we have to think, to agonize, to struggle, and to worry? The answer in this ancient allegory is that one cannot have it both ways in eating from the tree of knowledge. The price of knowledge and insight and experience is the loss of endearing simplicity and of know-nothing innocence. Primitive as is this 3,500-year-old story, reverberations of it are still around. It is the feeling, if only we could get back to where the choices are clear, the way they ought to be, where there is no confusion as to whether things are good or bad, where there are absolutes to which everyone subscribes, where heroes are real heroes and aren't riddled with flaws, where virtue is appropriately rewarded and wickedness consistently punished, where people are polite, respectful and tasteful, the way I remember back then. It is painful to find the Garden of Eden out of reach or replaced, no longer viable. Now, mixed in among those cute fuzzy animals in the garden paradise, there are the skunks, the alligators, and the jackals. Part of that rich, beautiful green foliage is a lot of poison oak and poison ivy. There are pretty berries that can make one violently ill. Terrifying hail and lightning sometimes fill the spacious skies, and the charming babbling brook becomes a violent torrent tearing up the landscape. That was disillusioning enough, but then there's the interpersonal stuff that just isn't very paradise-like. Eve comes to know that Adam has, well, bad breath in the morning. Adam is appalled at the way Eve snores really loudly at night, and even more appallingly, that she has the audacity not to agree with everything he says. So much then for Eden, for innocence, for simplicity, and sweet serenity. Here now, in their post-Eden world, there are repairs to be made, arguments to be settled, issues about how little Cain and Abel shall be raised, concern over injuries and diseases that come along, and a whole lot of disappointments and hurts to be dealt with. What is clear, though, is that there is no getting back to the way it was. Most of us learn that from our own post-Eden experiences. Once we have bitten from the tree of knowledge, there is no longer any not knowing that, for example, your world has no perfect people in it. Heroes, parents, the movie star, or the president turn out to have flaws, quirks, and weaknesses. And most of us learn that quite young. The way this Genesis story is told, it could give the impression that being out of paradise is a punishment, where it may actually be a birth process. Most of the rest of the Bible is about yours and my learning to live outside of Eden, loving an imperfect world, sorting our way through mistakes, sins, and frustrations, having to put up with all kinds of tragedies and forgiving ourselves and others over and over again. We do struggle with accepting that, though. One way people contrive to remain in Eden is religiously. It requires us to pull in the walls of life to a narrow religious framework and set of beliefs. And finally, it requires that we band together with the other residents of this bootlegged Garden of Eden for mutual reassurance that limiting life like this is right and anyone who doesn't do this is, well, wrong. For those who are able to do that to themselves, it may seem to work. If the paradise for which one hungers is one of simplicity, of dictated absolutes, and of avoiding the complications of knowing and understanding much, there are plenty of religions ready to oblige. Another strategy some try to get back to an Eden-like simplicity is the very familiar one of intellectually and emotionally dropping out, wrapping oneself in a cocoon of self-interest, disillusioned by human failings and social ills, by political corruption, hypocrisy, and deception. This person retreats into themselves, to a primitive Garden of Eden state of mind. They return to a time before they developed any social conscience, any moral sensitivity, or any idealism. If other people want to engage in the messed up world, fine. But this person won't. They'll detach from all of it, ignore it. And what they can't ignore, they'll dismiss as being the crummy way the world is, and therefore having nothing to do with them. There may be a kind of peace that can be achieved that way, but it's the peace that comes with emptiness. All of that hunger for simplicity, for absolutes, and for security can and does lead people astray. People have always, in fact, found it very tempting to try to sneak back into Eden, especially now, as our world and life becomes more complicated. The Garden of Eden was interesting, seductive to contemplate, but one cannot live there, except in fantasy. You and I, we were intended for something greater, something much more interesting, more creative, and much more purposeful than that. So, what does this ancient allegory about being kicked out of paradise have to do with you and me? What is it saying about our approach to living and offering ourselves? Well, first again is that Eden is a tempting fantasy of our memories. Life in history was never as simple and ideal as our memories tend to portray it to us. Regardless, it is over and gone. That simple, secure Garden of Eden is not an ideal or a goal. Instead, you and I are here to intelligently love this imperfect world and time, and do so with what are always our imperfect struggling minds and spirits. It will also mean our wading into all of life's mix of contradictions, dangers, and ambiguities, despite knowing full well the frustrations that await us in our doing so. It means accepting the fact, without exception, yours and my very finest efforts will probably be riddled with mistakes, weaknesses, flaws, or controversy that come with being on the cutting edge of what God is trying to create and accomplish. It will also then mean relentlessly working towards solutions or goals, knowing that there is a good chance that those goals and solutions are not quite the perfect ones, staying at it, though, because they're the best we can discern with the light we are given now. It means refusing to arrive at conclusions when tragic events, embarrassments, evil acts, or major disillusionments come upon us. And in terms of faith, it means believing that there is a caring, active, knowing God who may be using our less than perfect intelligence, our stabs at creativity, and our on-again, off-again commitment to create good and light through his Son, Jesus Christ, out of the chaos and out of the darkness. So, if you find that your life is not a sweet spiritual paradise, a nice Garden of Eden, don't let it bother you. Perhaps it was not supposed to be. Meanwhile, there's every likelihood that this unpredictable God of ours is quite excited about you, just as you are. And that's the story from the second and third chapters of Genesis. It may not be as some have said about original sin, but rather about the way each of us can unfold as an original blessing. Amen.